The views and opinions expressed by the following program are those of the host, guest, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station or the Webster Rock Hill Ministries, its management, or other host or underwriting sponsors. Programs presented on KWRHLP are for educational and entertainment purposes only. Views which are presented are for educational purposes only, and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or claim any cure of disease or condition.
This is Amanda LaPlante, and you're listening to Get Real to Heal on KWRHLP 92.9 FM. With me today is Pete Sandoval. And Pete is a licensed professional counselor in private practice as the owner of New Insights Counseling, and he works with adults and couples. He's received his master's degree in community counseling from the University of Missouri, St. Louis, and is a nationally certified counselor from the National Board of Certified Counselors. Welcome.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So you and I have had several conversations about something that's near and dear to my heart and has been essential to my recovery, which is addressing and recovering from trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a lot of good information to talk about here today, but first I want to touch on, you know, in your bio you say that you've been involved in personal growth for more than 25 years, and you have your own story of chronic health issues that's been integrated into your understanding of holistic health practice. Tell us more about that.
Sure. So, interestingly enough, I am also a survivor of trauma. Had a lot of things go on when I was very young in my home that were quite disturbing. Physical and emotional abuse. And I found therapy in my mid-20s. My first marriage was not doing well. I had a young child. And we'll talk a little bit later about the ACEs study and everything, but essentially I was very clearly in that category of people who was at risk for a lot of at-risk behaviors, a lot of things that were not going well in my own life, and decided I needed help. So I started my personal growth journey at the age of 25. Since then, through the course of working with a few different therapists and doing my own personal growth work as well outside of that, I eventually found in my mid-late 30s that I was starting to have some chronic health issues as well. So I was doing better. I was doing all of the right things, and yet my body was starting to act and treat me, so to speak, as if I was 50. And I was like, what's going on here? What's wrong? And probably around 40, 41, I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia and just had a lot of challenges with that. Got involved with a integrative health specialist and began to modify my diet, modify my lifestyle in some other significant ways. And that really led to what I would say is a more integrated approach. Like I said, I was already doing a lot of the things from a mental health perspective that were healthy, and I was still working on myself. I wasn't necessarily very active in therapy at that time because I didn't really need it on a regular basis. However, I was still struggling and realized that it was something that I needed to work on. So, as I said, I started learning a lot more about integrative health, and I've been able to manage my fibromyalgia with primarily through diet and exercise. Integrated a lot more mindfulness into my personal growth activities, and so far, so good.
It's great. Yeah. So, and I just so identified with your story, mm-hmm. you know, because it there's a lot of similarity there, right? And yeah. So we're going to get into kind of how. Well, let's start with what trauma is, because I think a lot of people think of trauma as, you know, the physical types of trauma, right? But they don't really fully understand what trauma does to us mentally and so on. So what's your definition of trauma?
Well, trauma essentially is a single or a series of events that overwhelms the body, the systems, the mind, the mental, cognitive, emotional part of our psyche. And in a way that in some cases, some people come out of it, they're okay, things are fine. But very often, especially if it happens younger in life, one's ability to overcome or get through it without there being some residual effect tends to be challenged.
So what happens to the brain and to the body during and after trauma?
That's a great question. It's very interesting because in the brain, when the brain essentially can't differentiate between what's real and what's not real. When we experience something, it just reacts. It's very automatic. The amygdala, our emotional part of our brain, is hardwired to deal with any kind of threat in a way that's automatic. It sits right above the brainstem. And when we get activated, we go into what we commonly know as fight or flight. So during that mode, the prefrontal cortex, the part of our brain that's involved with higher level thinking, shuts down for good reason. We are focused on the threat and we need to deal with it. And our body is ready to either run away or fight or flight.
Survival mode.
Exactly. Survival mode. What also can happen, or also does happen, is the brain sends signals to the body to secrete adrenaline and cortisol, which activates our body to deal with that threat. Our visual acuity becomes very narrow. We are focused in on the threat, and we are not taking in any other information. Our senses are extremely heightened. Sight, sound, taste, smell, touch, all of them are extremely heightened because we are focused on dealing with the threat in a way that allows us to mitigate it as much as possible. Now, if the threat happens to become much bigger, more overwhelming, or goes for an extended period of time, what can happen is we can go into the next level, which is called freeze. In the freeze mode, our muscles become limp, cortisol and adrenaline shuts off, and the brain says, I'm going to release endorphins. And the endorphins allow us to reduce the pain centers. So we're not experiencing pain, and we essentially go away. That freeze response is, kind of like the next level of self-preservation. If you've ever watched any nature videos where the animal goes completely limp as the predator is holding it, the animal is essentially feigning death and is not feeling anything. It's, as I said, it's cutting off the pain centers, and it doesn't experience or feel the pain because the pain can be so extreme that it could actually overwhelm the system. And that's what's happened. It said, okay, you're overwhelmed, shut it off, feign death, maybe the predator will go away, and maybe it will allow you to not experience the physical pain for an extended period of time.
That's so terrifying. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
but yeah.
But that's
it makes sense.
It does. And what's interesting too, if you watch those nature videos, if for some reason the predator gets pulled away or something happens, eventually the animal will get up and it will shake itself loose.
Right.
And what it's doing is it's shaking off that residual energy that gets trapped in the body. And nature has a way of allowing the body to do that if given the opportunity. Unfortunately, what can happen is if the resources are not available for a human to do that, that energy can stay trapped in the body and can also be trapped in the brain because the amygdala is very close to the hippocampus, and the hippocampus is where we have memory creation. So memories don't get integrated from the hippocampus until later at the end of trauma because that part of the brain gets shut down. But the hippocampus is where all of the sensory information from the brain gets pulled in, sight, sound, taste, touch, you know, and all of them, they get pulled into the hippocampus. And that's why when people have traumatic memory or they're remembering things, a sight, a sound, you know, a smell or something can trigger it because those memories get trapped in that part of the brain and they stimulate or re-trigger the experience for the person. They feel as if it's happening to them right now and they don't know the difference.
I actually have tears in my eyes right now because this actually puts together what happened to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, this puts together what happened to me. And we can go back to that.
Absolutely.
All right. So I guess the next question really makes a lot of sense. So why is it so important to understand trauma?
That's a good
yeah. Right?
Yeah. Not only does it have a mental health effect, but what is so important about it is that the after effects of trauma can be not only people, if it happens at a young age, people mm-hmm. are extremely vulnerable.
Right.
So one of the things that can happen is it can have a negative impact on brain development. The other thing is there can be a significant impact on positive coping skills. If the child is not given the resources to deal with it, if there's not a positive caregiver who helps them process and understand and integrate, and or if they are continuing to be traumatized, perhaps even by that significant caregiver, then it really reduces their ability. But it does impact brain development itself. So the brain has difficulty developing, and they become more vulnerable to future trauma. Another thing that's important is, you know, I mentioned adrenaline and cortisol. We know that cortisol is a source of inflammation.
Yeah.
So if someone is vulnerable to trauma and they experience a lot of things at a young age, they are now pre-wiring their brain to be more heightened, to secrete cortisol more frequently. So they have higher levels of inflammation. So as they reach adulthood, they've developed more negative coping skills to try and deal with the higher levels of anxiety, worry, or traumatic responses that they're experiencing. So we have negative coping skills on top of higher levels of cortisol, i.e. inflammation, and mental health issues. So it's all connected.
It is totally all connected. It's definitely been my experience. Okay. So let's talk about the ACE study and what ACE stands for.
ACE stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences. And the study was done in the mid-late 90s, I want to say 96 through 98 roughly. And what they did is, the reason why it was so groundbreaking is they had a large number of participants, about 17,000 participants altogether took place. And these people were people with chronic health issues. Many of them had life-threatening issues, heart attack, cancer, high blood pressure. They were facing, you know, significant health problems. Many of them also had negative coping skills as well that were contributing factors. What they did is they started asking them and did, like I said, a huge survey to understand what happened to them in childhood, if there might be a connection. And that's exactly what they discovered, was that the more adverse childhood experiences that they had, the higher levels of chronic health issues and negative coping skills that were contributing factors to them. So the study basically bore out what I just explained, which is that when people experience a high number of adverse childhood experiences, not only do they have mental health issues, but it does create a vulnerability and a high propensity of chronic health issues that are life-threatening, and the lifespan is significantly reduced.
Right. Makes absolute sense. And, you know, so last week on the show, we had an expert in genetics. And we were talking about the fact that, you know, you're born with your particular set of genetics,
mm-hmm.
but so much of what happens to you in your body and your life, right, is environmental, right? All of that impacts
absolutely.
That genetic expression. So someone may have the exact same genes as me, but if they didn't have the same childhood trauma that I had, or the traumas that I had in adulthood, which again, with all of those different coping mechanisms not being there, et cetera, from that childhood experience,
right.
everything else that happened thereafter, so much more extreme in many mm-hmm. ways, you know, they may not manifest the same diseases and issues that I now have to deal with. And not even to get into, you know, outside of the autoimmune issues and things like that, you know, just adrenal fatigue. Because I've been pumping out cortisol for so, so long, because
right.
I've been at this heightened stress response for mm-hmm. so long. Yeah. It's just like, wow.
Did the guest happen to mention anything about epigenetics?
We touched on that. We did touch on that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Epigenetics. I'm by no means an expert, but sure. It is an area I'm beginning to do more research around, because what is coming out from neuroscience around it is definitely important to understanding what's going on in the body and how therapy and other kinds of positive health things that we can do, mindfulness, you know, working with someone like yourself, a health coach, getting involved in self-help groups, creating a community of support and engaging in positive lifestyle actually can influence the epigenetic expression of our genes,
right,
which allows us to reverse some of these effects.
Downregulate that expression.
Exactly.
And you know, so the light at the end of the tunnel, right,
mm-hmm.
that you and I have experienced.
Absolutely.
As our health has improved,
mm-hmm.
as we've improved all of these mechanisms in this mental health state that we were in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really amazing to be in remission from multiple autoimmune diseases now and be off of medications. Mm-hmm. Like I was on so many. And to see that that's possible, I love that you're able to be here today and to share this information with everyone. And I hope that people are listening and taking this in, because it can make a world of difference.
Absolutely.
For sure. So is there anything else you want to talk about on the neuroscience and kind of the connection between the physical and mental health? Or have we pretty much covered that?
I think we pretty much covered it. I guess what I would say is, you know, kind of like myself, you can be doing all of the right things, but one of the things to keep in mind is if you have experienced some form of trauma or adverse childhood experiences, and not necessarily even at, you know, early childhood, it can happen teenage years or young adulthood, the brain is still developing well into the mid-20s. That's when the prefrontal cortex finally finishes developing. So anything that happens in that early window of time, early life, can have a significant impact on brain development and then subsequently all of the things that we do after that. The reason I think that's important is because we also get wired for our responses and coping skills. And even, I can say for myself, even now after all these years of doing my own work and being a professional, you know, when something significant happens in my life, I have to remember to fall back on those positive coping skills. I can feel myself getting at times triggered, or at least momentarily or for brief periods of time going kind of out of whack. And I will tell you that my fibromyalgia will flare up from time to time when I'm under stress.
Yeah.
So I'm aware of it. But what I think a lot of people forget is you can be doing all of the right things, but it's important to build a support network for yourself for the rest of your life, because life happens and we're going to experience loss. We're going to experience struggle. Any kind of change that's significant, change of job, change of life, you know, the five top stressors, grief, you know, a significant loss, changing jobs, marriage, divorce, and moving. Those are all high stressors, and they're part of, you know, the life cycle. So it's important for people to consider mental health as an ongoing practice. Not necessarily you have to go to therapy all the time for extended periods of time, but to consider that as another option in addition to all of the things they may be doing for their health ongoing. In addition to creating, as I said, one of the things I do with all my clients is say, how can we help you build a support network for yourself so that you don't need to come see me anymore? I'm trying to put myself out of a job.
It's same here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. We want to teach people to have those skills to be able to live the best possible life they can forever.
Right.
Whether we're there or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Talk to me about, I don't know a lot about this one, attachment theory.
Okay. So attachment theory was developed post-World War II. The idea essentially came from a gentleman by the name of John Bowlby, who had, he had observed children in the hospital that, you know, the initial thinking was, that was back during the Dr. Spock years where, you know, let the child cry it out and all of that.
Sure.
Which was counterintuitive. But what he discovered was that, you know, the children whose parents came regularly to the hospital had a quicker recovery. And he started exploring that and partnered with some other researchers. And essentially what they discovered was how important that emotional attachment is. Having someone who turns towards the child during various stages of development, but just knowing that child has a caregiver who can turn towards them during times of need, emotional and or physical. It does help with brain development, helps develop positive coping skills. So they've been able to study in neuroscience now how healthy attachment actually has significant impact on brain development. It also can set people up for vulnerability to trauma if they're not getting significantly attached to someone. So disorganized attachment is a term used for a child who gets the mixed message growing up, that sometimes my caregiver is here, sometimes they're not, sometimes they're abusive or demeaning, and sometimes they're not. So the adverse childhood experiences study, what it did is it pointed out, probably for the most part, the more significant events that we think of, abuse, trauma, drugs and alcohol, a parent being incarcerated, it didn't encompass as much the more dysfunctional kinds of things that can happen in a family that can also lead to what we call complex trauma. So complex trauma essentially is when a child has a very difficult attachment situation growing up. And while they may not have a significant traumatic event, they can have small events that can occur over time with their significant attachment figure or attachment figures that can create a similar kind of traumatic response. The term we typically use for that is highly dysfunctional families or dysfunctional families. Maybe there's alcohol abuse, maybe there's not, but at the very least, there's an inconsistency in prominent caregiving that goes on in the home that can reduce the child's ability to trust. And then as they then enter other relationships in the world, that can compound itself and lead to what we call complex trauma.
Ripple effect, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, you know, we see so many, it seems like as a society, in many ways, we've just turned our attention outward and away from the home,
mm-hmm.
right? And so we're seeing, you know, higher divorce rates, higher crime rates, all these other things. Like, what's the implication of all of this for our society, mm-hmm. right? If we don't fix this.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's why the ACE study is so important, is being used as the template now for mental health approach in a lot of cases, particularly with at-risk situations or at-risk families. But even so, in across the board, it is being considered the standard for how we think about care for our young people so that we can change the dynamic and change the way kids are raised. Because again, the adverse childhood experience is focused on, you know, the more significant events. But what it did point out is how it impacts the physiological development, both in the body and in the brain, and has a really strong long-term effect down the road.
All right. So let's talk about complex trauma a little bit more. Oh, we're already at 3 minutes. This has been a great conversation. So what that tells me is you need to come back.
I'd be happy to.
Great. But we do have a few minutes left. So rather than talking about complex trauma, let's touch on a little bit of the therapeutic approaches that you use
mm-hmm.
in
sure.
your practice that are working well.
Right. So one of the primary things that I use is EMDR, which stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. Technically, it's not reprocessing in the literal sense, but what it is it's a way to do what's called bilateral stimulation. It activates the part of the hippocampus and the amygdala in a way that allows for integration of those traumatic memories that get locked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going through that type of therapy now for my trauma, and mm-hmm. it's kind of amazing.
It is. It's amazing to watch. Part of our training involved us actually doing it with each other, and so I did experience what it feels like.
Yeah.
I know what it feels like, and I wish that it had been around when I was doing my trauma work a long time ago. That's neither here nor there, but I do understand the power of it.
Yeah. So, and you also use somatic experiencing and brain spotting.
Yeah.
Like 10-second explanation of each, yeah.
So somatic experiencing, I'm very new to it, but I am just now in training and learning on it. And basically what it is, remember I talked about the animal is shaking itself. So it's a way of getting clients connected to the body and releasing that, helping them to gradually release that energy. It's a very good complement for EMDR. Brain spotting kind of grew out of EMDR. Sometimes people get stuck, and brain spotting is a way to help them get out of that stuck place during an EMDR process, essentially. It uses the visual acuity field for helping people to reconnect to wherever they're stuck in that memory.
And you're a great person for helping people get unstuck. How can people reach out to you?
Well, I'm at newinsightsstl.com. My number is 314-287-3088. So please feel free to reach out. I'd be happy to talk with you. I work with trauma, anxiety. I work with couples. I can work with regular, ordinary kinds of everyday stuff as well.
Pete Sandoval, thank you for joining me today. This is Amanda LaPlante. You've been listening to Get Real to Heal on KWRHLP 92.9 FM. For more information from me, find me on Facebook.com/GetRealToHeal. Listen to this and other episodes, SoundCloud.com/GetRealToHeal. And call me anytime at 314-583-6749. Make it a great day.